All right, everybody, and welcome to episode 263 of the 9 Years podcast. I am Nick Draper. I am joined, as always, by the face of the BBC Sport website, Mr. Stuart Deakins. And we're just talking football this week, as you would hope and expect. We have another win to talk about at Morecambe last week. We have a couple of games to look forward to. Plymouth at home in the league, Arsenal in the League Cup this week. And we'll be doing all the usual features, including our look back at this week in the year 2001, the final season of Wimbledon FC. But Stu, let's discuss the 4-3 win at Morecambe, which was, and I'm just going to do the maths in my head, so bear with me, 23 years and 2 days after we won that 4-3 comeback classic victory at Upton Park at West Ham. So really, that's tenuous to make that link. And at Morecambe, we weren't 3-0 down at any point. However, we were 3-2 down midway through the second half. And we've once again shown that we are a team that likes being behind because we pick up a lot of points from losing positions, or we have done so far this season. What does that say about our young squad?
Well, if you look at any other team, if we were, say, like we were analysing the league at, I don't know, 10 games, 20 games, and you saw the stats that I think we've got the most equalising goals or come from behind to win, I think, in the league already. I know it's still very young. Normally, you would say that team is a good team, resilient, and probably will do well and be up there and amongst it, because that's a very, you know, any championship-winning team or successful team will pick up points and recover points, so, like late equalisers and stuff like that. And we do that in abundance. It's just becoming, it's almost becoming expected. And that's probably, and I think that's probably where it is. You know, the team is fit. It's doesn't know when it's beaten. It's got a very good, it's very calm. One thing I noticed on Saturday when watching it back was that Robbo always very calm. You know, he said about he doesn't get too excited. He equally doesn't get too rattled. So there's a calmness there, isn't there? That, you know, if you're looking over to the bench, you know, if you were playing for Gillingham, you'd be thinking, what is, you know, is there something, you know, has Steve Evans got something in his underwear that's stinging him or something? Do you know what I mean? He's always jumping up and down and that sort of stuff. Whereas Robbo, it's just calmness and it goes through the team. So I think it comes from that as well.
Robbo would make a fantastic teacher. He really would. Just because he has high expectations, but he also has that, exactly as you're saying, Stu, that calm approach. If you're a teacher going in there and you're ranting and raving and shouting and screaming, you ain't getting anything out of your kids. They are going to see that. It's going to fluster them. Their heart rate's going to go up. Their mind's going to start racing. That's not what you want. Well, it'll be exactly as you say, nice and calm. Keep everything in perspective. Keep doing what you're doing and things will work for you. And I think that's what we're seeing this season. The character of the team, like we said, or as we said there, the way you're sort of beginning to expect us not to lose, to come back from losing positions and pick up points. I had one of those moments. And I mean, listeners, you can believe this if you wish to. As you know, Stu, over the years, I've had many epiphany moments. Well, epiphany is the wrong word. Mystic Meg-esque moments where I've not been panicked or worried or concerned about a result because I've just thought we'll be fine at the end of it. Going back many, many years, back to Torquay away on New Year's Day, or at least very early into the year, back in 2013, where we got a last-minute penalty to win it, a must-win game. We did it going through to the famous Rochdale 4-3, another 4-3 away game. The Warsaw game, where we were 2-0 down at half-time. I thought, no, I'm still fine. We're going to win this one. Last season with the Rochdale late goal from Joe Piggott as well. Rochdale helped up a lot. On Saturday, I wasn't paying attention. I'm going to be very honest with you. I was watching wrestling and I got a notification on my phone to say that we were 1-0 up through Anthony Hartigan. I was like, fine, great. But you know what? I'm watching wrestling. I don't want to be disturbed. I want to commit fully to this. So I turned my phone notifications off and put my phone away. And then I did look to see what the score was just to check up. And at that point it was 3-2. And I thought to myself, we'll win this 4-3. And at full time, I knew I was going to turn my phone to find out we'd won 4-3. And lo and behold, that's what happened. Had I not been watching wrestling, I'd have been on Twitter going, don't worry, everyone. We're going to win this 4-3. It's going to happen. I don't know why I have these feelings. I just do. But they are becoming, I think, more common amongst the fan base at the moment, where a lot of fans are now going, not worried. If we go behind, before in previous years, a lot of fans would have said, we go behind, 25 minutes to go, worst thing that could happen. But no, not that feeling at all. And it's Robbo's sort of calmness and belief and trust in the process that is spreading almost through osmosis throughout the whole Wimbledon fan base.
Yeah, and, you know, obviously I was watching the game on Saturday from my Costa del Epsom Sunshine location. And, yeah, when you balanced it, we dominated the first half. And Morecambe had a really good 15 minutes. They stopped trying to stop us playing, which is the greatest compliment you could ever have when the team changes their formation to stop you playing. I can't remember the last time that happened. But they scored some really good goals, you know. And it wasn't that I was applauding. Like, you know, when someone scores a goal like Stockton did with the lob, I said to you before of an eye that I'm expecting Zanev to get lobbed. And because he naturally will, because if, you know, I said to you before, he plays as that sweeper keeper, but he, and he's very pivotal to how we play, but we have to accept that that's going to happen. You know, Stockton's on form and he did that. But normally I'd be like, oh, there's your luck. Like, we ain't going to come back from this. You know, like, you think, oh, God, what's your luck? But yeah. But then I think it's the players as well. Like, you didn't see the players looking, you know, and Alex Widjard said in our interview that we did, that he still thought we were going to win. You know, it was that strong belief, wasn't it? And also, like, you know, we finished so strong. I think what it would be good, you know, give a thought on Saturday, if we are behind in a game, I think the good thing is that the fans won't get on the players' back because they have belief. If your fans have belief in the process, as Robbo calls it, if your fans have belief that we're always in a game, you know, no matter where we are, then actually that doesn't provide negative energy to the players. And that's the thing, isn't it? You know, like, you know, I think the fans are just as important as the management team are in some situations. We've seen, how many times have we gone, you know, if you remember the old days, you know, go to Leeds, you know, if you don't, and we're going back to the Premier League days, you know, if you keep quiet for 20 minutes, then the fans are on the back. You know, we all said that, didn't we?
Yeah.
Whereas Plough Lane is just a positive energy, which again, I think we've got a massive role to play, and we can see we're not just, you know, foolishly believing it. We've seen it already in, what, 7 league games?
Yeah.
It's just been a great start to the season.
Yeah, really good. And, I mean, we've got a huge... I say huge, all right. I might be overselling it there. We've got an exciting game coming up in the week against Arsenal. And, Stu, that theory of keeping the home crowd quiet for 20 minutes would obviously normally come into play in these situations. But with Arsenal, there's going to be no noise anyway. So I must admit, I've been to the, I'm going to call it Ashburton Grove, their stadium. I've been there before. I saw Arsenal play Fulham there. And I can say this as someone who, let's be fair, is middle class himself. That was the most middle class football match I'd ever attended. And if you wanted atmosphere, you went to the wrong football match that day. But anyway, we've got off the point, as I tend to do.
I watched Match of the Day. I haven't watched Match of the Day much, if I'm being honest with you. But I did chuckle. I didn't realise Arsenal hadn't scored. And their goal that they scored was that typical. Have you seen the goal that they scored? It's basically it's one of the goals when you're put on form too, when you're everything's up against you and you're not on form, the ball literally trickles over the line and you try your hardest to miss it than actually score it. And it was one of those like relegation things, the crowd went mad, and Arsenal is steeped in tradition, you know, and Highbury, you know, you and I had a great pleasure going to Arsenal, didn't we? And Highbury, as much as a joke about it, it's Highbury and Library, it was steeped in history, wasn't it? Do you know what I mean?
Like proper football stadium.
You actually thought you were at a ground that had history and the great players that have played there and stuff like that. It's probably why, you know, I made no secret, I'm not going to go to the Arsenal game. It just doesn't excite me, which people may think is weird, but I've been to Highbury when we beat them 3-1 in the league and that, and I don't want to go in a ground, you know, you said about middle class. I don't want to go into a ground that's full of Premier League fans who just expect they should spend millions and they should be better than what they are. I just don't want to be around it. Which is weird, you know. That's my thinking. So, yes, if we win, I will miss it, but I will be supporting. Obviously, I'll be interested, But I just don't have any interest to go in, even though I know why it's such a big game.
Yeah, and we will speak more about it in the show. Sorry, that's my fault for getting us waylaid. Morecambe, next point I want to make about this. Set pieces. How important they are, we spoke about last week. We spoke about it following the Oxford game. I said it was the key reason behind our victory over Oxford. And again, three goals of the four have come as a result of set pieces. Two directly, Hartigan's for the first and then Will's equaliser. And then the winner came from a corner, which Morecambe didn't clear, and Assel volleyed it in. Fantastic finish. Let's actually start with that one, because I just get it out of the way. Instinctive finish. Isn't one of those where you don't really have time to think about it. You know, it just falls for you, and you know immediately there's only one thing you can do. And he pulled it off fantastically.
Yeah, let's not kid ourselves. Interesting kid ourselves. Yeah. Assel hasn't been hitting the levels that we've seen him. You know, and that's really mad when you think about it. When the league games he's got, but he has been a bit quiet for his standards recently. Mm. So for him to still have that belief, confidence to it, look, I don't know if you've seen it from behind the goal, but it looks even more impressive from behind the goal, because you can sort of catch the speeds, you know, real time speed.
Yeah.
And you know, he has a little area to do what he needs to do, but the touch, the setup, and then finish off the crossbar, it's really, really good goal. It's, you know, last minute, not, you know, there was no pressure on that, was there? You know, it feels his team doesn't have any pressure on them, because they're doing things that are things that are instinctive, but they're not frightened to do it. It's like that, you know, go and do what you want to do. If you miss, you miss, but actually you've had a chance, it may go in, and it does.
Yeah, it's like a fearlessness of youth, and certainly taking risks is important. And as you say, it's to be taking, there's nothing to feel bad or thought negatively of for attempting something. If it doesn't happen, it doesn't come off. It's fine. No one's going to rake you over the coals for it. And we've been saying it for years, and it's almost become a bit of a cliche. Sorry, I've undersold that terribly. It is a cliche on the WAP guest book about have a shot at goal, but we've been saying it for years, and people have been frustrated when we wouldn't want to do it. And now everyone's doing it. And Anthony Hartigan is doing it. And when Anthony Hartigan's getting the opportunity to shoot, you know that the players have taken this advice on board and they've lost that nervousness about having a go or trying something in the right areas. Sometimes, you know, some areas still shouldn't do certain things, but we'll come back to that one at a time.
Yeah. I was just going to say...
No.
Sorry, I was just going to say, you've got to be thinking about something. It's really interesting, Anthony Hartigan, isn't it? Because he plays that quarterback position. It feels like, you know, like not quarterback, it's not a position, is it? But it's like that American football sort of like setting up play and dictating it. But it's like we have power plays in final thirds. I get my thinking. So,
what is a power play?
A power play is like, I'm very much thinking about NFL, right, in terms of set plays. So, you know, like on the touchline, they have like... they have a rule book, don't they? With what it's very
a playbook.
Technical. Playbook, that's the thing, isn't it? I look at a playbook like, you know, I give to Thomas to do some drawings in. But it's very much like certain situations you see, and it's becoming very clear now with, you know, we our fullbacks go straight away when Anthony gets the ball, and he sort of knows where certain people will be. But we're so difficult to defend against. And then you sort of see, in a way, people back off Hartigan because they know he can pick the pass. But actually, if he has that shot, you know, if he has that technique, he has got technique. If he has that to his game about shooting ability, getting on target and stuff like that, it then totally buffs them because he's got both sides to it. Mm. But what I mean, I just feel like we're really well drilled in that final third, even though it's, Robbo said, they're free to express what they want to do. The way we open up space is really, really good. Do you know what I mean? And there was examples of that on Saturday, and that's encouraging when that's an away game, where, as we know previously, a lot of teams that are going to come to Plough Lane are going to play one up. We don't really do that.
No, we Rob is very much of the mentality, we impose ourselves on the opposition as much as they do on us. And yeah, we're seeing it come to fruition at the moment. Hartigan is the man of the moment, though, with his set-piece deliveries. And I mean, his goal on Saturday, outrageous angle, really, to be getting it in from there. And then you're just seeing the benefits, as we've said before, training ground practice with these routines. Will peeling away at the back post to get the header at the far post. He's becoming our new Matt Everard with all these goals, little streak he's on. But it's all because of the hard work on the training ground, as far as I can see, making sure the players know what runs to make. And then you're having the reliance, rightly, on Hartigan to deliver pretty much pinpoint.
Yeah, so I was listening to the away commentary on Saturday, and they were, you know, when
I have to stop you there, Stu. The away commentary would be our commentary.
That's very true, actually. How do you? Because I class them as the away. No, they're not the away team. They're the home team, but we're away. Yeah,
you can say the opposition. The opposition commentary.
I listened to the Morecambe commentary,
right?
And it was. You always. It's interesting because I always like to see is it biased because it should be. Why
well,
not?
Yeah. They're in-house but also, com, yeah.
But also some little bit of realisation of what the other team is. And they praise us heavily. But one of the things they were saying was, we know Wimbledon are strong at set pieces, but we're not playing very well today. And their first thing was to go, their team wasn't playing well rather than us not allowing them to play well, which is always that sort always, of side of it. But they were sort of saying, you know, their manager, I forgot what he's called, Romsuk, I think his first name is.
Steve.
That's it. Yeah, you know, they done
formerly of Luton Town.
That's how you knew. And they were sort of saying that he had been preparing them for set pieces because they knew how strong we were and they changed their formation. And incidentally, after the game, when they interviewed him, I watched the interview and he just conceded. We did all that work and we still got done by four set pieces because he includes the throw-in as the restart, which again was
okay.
The setup.
All right.
I don't think Andy Parsley takes that. I don't think, I might be wrong, I don't think he includes that, but it's technically a restart, it's a throw-in, isn't it? And he was like, even at the throw-in, we didn't set up properly. You know, we allowed them to get a throw-in and they got better back of us if you, you know, on our side of it. So, and he was, but I think he was more of a case that, well, we are prepared for them, but they still done us. And that's the thing, because you know, like when you're good at something, they always say like, when you get promoted, the first round of games is fine, you're new to everybody, but the second round of games, they've done, you know, they've done their homework. Well, you'd expect teams to be doing homework at the moment because we are winning games through a lot of set pieces. But we have such good delivery variety because there's no way Will should be on, what, three goals now, is it? Three or from set pieces? And very similar goals.
Yeah, not from all set pieces, but I think it's three in the league, isn't it?
Yeah. Now, if you look at the goals, they're very similar. You just said peeling off and stuff like that. But he's still doing it because it means that we're being clever in what we're setting up. So it's like going, well, the same threat is there, but we're doing something different to disguise where we're going to go. We'll still go there and still do the same goal. A set piece always looks easy when you score it. It's like, well, how do you get free so easily? But the thing that Andy Hart had been done really early on was by taking that shot on target, he straight away confused them. She's like, they're like, actually, he's going to shoot as well. Do you know what I mean? Constantly keeping them thinking. And you have to say, you know, the work we are doing on set pieces and restarts is really, you know, really making us strong. And we're making it, we're mixing it up because teams should be able to defend it, but they're not.
No, but I mean, this does go back throughout history and we've made the comparison of Hartigan and David Beckham in previous years, but every single team that ever played against David Beckham knew exactly what was coming. It's a whole other thing actually being able to defend it. And it was proven time after time after time, as is what we are doing at the moment. Is there, this is going to sound super negative, but I have to offer some contrast along the way somewhere. I have to offer some, it can't all be positive all the time. Lots of goals, lots and lots of goals from us. Top scorers in the entire Football League. Our strikers need to score more.
Yes, indeed. Hey, look, it's an interesting thing, isn't it? Because old school fans, and we are old. I know you're not as old as you.
I am 27.
Exactly. So, but you're quite wise for your age.
Thank
your
you.
Years.
I'll excuse the quite.
Yeah, but historically, your forwards score your goals. That's you know, if you think about when we were watching the Premier League days, who would have thought that your best attackers sometimes are your fullbacks because they were straight basic. They were just fullbacks. They defended, didn't they? You know, going over the halfway line, you thought they had a nosebleed. Yeah, and you know, think about Alan Kimball and Kenny Cunningham. They didn't particularly overlapped that much back in those days. So I think the game has changed. I hate saying that because it's still the same game with the same football and 11 players. But I just think, I don't know if we do need to go. Because if you think, I'm just going to give you sort of an example. I think Aaron Presley, when I saw him at the Pompey game and I've seen him live a couple of other times, his actual hold-up play is now becoming really effective. So he's not someone that's going to play against the centre-half. He's putting in, come and drop into, you know, that sort of mid-area between the lines. And he can hold up, play. He's now learned to play with his back to goal, but then he can bring the full-backs in. So actually, the work he's doing is not necessarily scoring the goals, but he's involved in that way of it. Mm. So I think, you know, yeah, should we be getting more goals? Possibly. But how refreshing is it not to be relying on Joe Piggott? You know, he's sitting on the bench getting splinters up his backside at the moment for Ipswich. And we haven't missed him, no matter how good a player he was for us last season.
We'll come on to Ipswich as well in a little bit. We can't not do it at the current time. But no, I take your point. But I also take your point. You talk about the game being the same as years past and 20 years ago, still having 11 players on the pitch. We're going to have to field an 11 against Arsenal. We've got a squad of which every single member of the squad will want to be playing in that game. This is a difficult one, isn't it? I don't envy Robbo in this position because he's going to disappoint a few people. Do you think we're making changes throughout the team and every week? We've discussed the reasons why we're doing this before. There seems to be a little bit of a spine that's developed, though, in which you would say they're your first choice. And I'm looking at the two centre halves. I'm looking at Lawrence, either at right or left back. Woodyard, Hartigan, they are your sort of spine, and then Zanev in goal. Is it difficult when you've had such rotation, though, to disappoint players when a big game comes along? I say big, you know, in inverted commas. I know it's a cliche. I should be better than that, to be honest with you, but if it will work for the moment.
Yeah, I think the difference is, I think if we'd had this game 2 or 3 seasons ago, I'm not going to say under what manager, you know, we've had quite a few under the last 2 or 3 years. I probably would say, yeah, it's going to be difficult. But the way Robbo has got this team thinking in terms of the subs are just important. You know, there's a great article in the Athletic this week, if you get a chance, it is behind a paywall, but it's about this, you know, the substitute code.
Sorry, just because I'm not really particularly au fait with it. Blimey. What did I say about being middle class? The Athletic is it's a sport website, isn't it? It's not just football, is it? But it's a website, basically.
Yeah, it's a website that has a subscription to. I'll be truthful, I haven't got a membership. I was fortunate enough to see the interview by someone else. But it was a really good interview with the new substitute coach we've got. And it was all about the finishers, which I know will wind you up, but that's what they call them now, because, you know, I think we'll come on to the substitute coach at another point, because I really would like to get him onto our podcast at some point, because it really interests me. But I think the way Robbo has set the team up is that everyone in that squad is important. So they will, they won't be the ones that don't play, and even the 19th man that doesn't even get onto the bench will still be involved. Robbo will make sure they're all inclusive. So I don't think we're going to have as many problems as we, let's say problems, but I think they'll all get something out of it. You're right, the spine is important, but that's, if you look at the spine, that's our most experienced and oldest players. No matter how mad that, you know, Andy Hartigan, what, 21 is 100 league appearances? It's ridiculous. So I think if you keep the spine and then all around it, I think that's where we go. I'd be like, you know, Plymouth is a great game to go if you play well against Plymouth, no matter if you're start or your finisher. If you do your job and you impress me, then you start, you know. Depends how we go. Do we go all out to play Arsenal at their own game? Do we go to attack them, or do we go to be a bit cautious? That's Robbo's decision.
Playing Arsenal at their own game, as a fan watching us play Arsenal back in the late 90s, their own game involved a lot of Martin Keown elbows and players falling over. But hey, let's not go back down memory lane on that one. We'll do that later on in the show. Overall, though, Stu, a fantastic victory at Morecambe. We've spoken about the goals. Very entertaining. All happy days. Can we give a best or worst week award?
Yeah, you can. I think Andy Hart can guess him. Just because, hey, look, the set pieces have won us the game. The delivery has won us the game. You can't get away from that. I think you can't get anywhere. I don't think you can go anywhere but Andy Hargan.
Worst week.
Hey, look, we conceded goals again, and I don't really blame Nick Zanev for the goal, but we have to accept that, you know, that's what happened. So has he had a bad week? No, it's just that, you know, it's I suppose it's more experience for him to develop. You know, I don't think he was particularly far off his line, but, you know, the goal's been scored by distance. So I wouldn't say he's had a bad week, but if I'm going to pick anybody, it probably would be him.
And fair play to Stockton as well for spotting the opportunity and executing it as he did. We highlighted him last week as a threat and he scored twice. And good player. And I still think, well, again, Morecambe was someone we're going to revisit later in the podcast. But yeah, I think that's all we've really got to say about that for the time being. Elsewhere in the division, I'm going to get this one out of the way first because I think this is one we've got less to talk about. I just highlighted Fleetwood getting a 4-2 win at Rotherham. And Rotherham have been up and down and up and down and up and down. That cycle has to end at some point. I'm wondering if this is the year where it just doesn't quite happen for them. I know it's very early days, but it's very difficult to keep on doing what they've been doing. And after a while, you just have to accept that there are going to be other challenges and other teams in this division that are going to beat you to promotion. And I think conceding 4 at home to Fleetwood, they got a point against Lincoln in the week, which arrested that little bit of a dodgy spell. But yeah, fair play Fleetwood, first win of the season, but Rotherham, I'm not feeling it this year for them.
Yeah, I get what you're saying, actually. It's a very good point because, and again, I haven't looked into this heavily, but I think from what I see on the highlights, that squad is very much still the nucleus of the teams that have gone up and down in recent years. And I think you're right, actually. It's a good point. Because sometimes maybe that just needs to freshen things up. Because if you're a yo-yo team, well, where is that motivation? And I still see some people say that this league isn't as tough as it is. I think because we've started so well, I think that underplays how well we played. But it's a tough division. It's a tough division. So, you know, for Rotherham, I give you example, Wickham coming in and not doing as well as I thought they would do. It's a tough division. So I think, yeah, Rotherham maybe need to look here. Do they need to freshen out? I don't think they do too much this season, but it's a big statement of intent. And Fleetwood need that confidence because they're not one of the big players anymore this season.
No. Their first away win of the season, I should just clarify if I said first win of the season, first away win of the season for Fleetwood. The other result, and we said we could talk about them, Ipswich 2, Bolton 5.
Yeah.
It's literally rendered me speechless because Ipswich are now 6 games into the League One season, have yet to win a game and have conceded 15 goals, by far and away the highest in the league. Now, we went there, we got a 2-2 draw, and I said, you know, so I just couldn't see them drawing 2-2 at home again, and every single game they conceded 2 goals. And you think, well, that run will come to an end. They'll sort that out. And we'll talk about defences with Plymouth as well actually in a moment. But you always expect them to get a clean sheet or something like to break the cycle, and then they go and ship 5 at home to a Bolton team that we saw and I was very impressed with, and I thought there's loads of goals in that Bolton team. But even so, I mean, is this just a classic example of just wholesale changes, sweeping up as many good players as you can without any thought as to how you're actually going to get them to integrate as a team?
It does feel that way, doesn't it? You know, Paul Cook is renowned for getting team promoted. But I think even he would probably admit this is probably the biggest pressure he's had. I don't believe he's had a club this size or expectation. You know, he's picking up an Ipswich team that the fans don't think they should have been in that league in the first place, let alone hitting their, what, third season now? Yeah, it's their third season, isn't it?
Third season, yeah.
And they've got a new manager. It's hey, look, do you know what? The irony is they didn't like Mick McCarthy, but actually he was the best thing for them.
Yep.
But hey, you get what you're... It's up to you as fans. The thing that was interesting for me was I saw that it was 5-2, but in your head, you always think, like, them results, they were obviously late goals where, you know, Ipswich were chasing and caught a counter. But they were 5-2 up at the 56th minute.
Yeah.
So that doesn't stack. So they literally had half an hour of Ipswich not even getting a goal, and Bolton just sitting on a 5-2 lead.
Yep.
Bolton have got goals in them. There's no doubt about that. Mm. We saw that against us, but we also saw the threat that way. They're playing well up front. You know, they got beat by the under-21s in the Pizza Trophy, which, yes, you don't take too much notice in, but what I did notice that Ollie Norwood was playing up front for them in that. When you look at the forwards they've got, yeah, you know, you've seen my point. Yeah. You know, Norwood, Chaplin, Piggott, Bond. And they're only playing one up. You know, and I look, obviously, from an interest of Joe Piggott, not because I want to, I can honestly say, not because I want to gloat that he went to a big club and he's sitting on the bench. I think that's not how I see it. But generally, want to see how he's getting on. But how can he do anything when he's on the bench? Yeah. And he's a good player. You've got a 20-goal forward there for a club that wasn't achieving. You know, the last part of the season was when we scored a lot of goals late, didn't he? Yeah. And he can't even get a game. Now, yes, he might be being paid handsomely, but he's sitting and he's just, he will forget about players very quickly.
Yeah.
That's the thing. And he's just another player at Ipswich. And Paul Cook's going to be out of it. If he doesn't get, I think they're away at Lincoln this weekend. So he needs a result. Because I do look at the Ipswich Town Twitter feed because I just like seeing big clubs in turmoil with their fans. And they're not going to wait long.
As you say, they're away at Lincoln weekend. Memories of FA Cup ties in previous years when Lincoln were in non-league, of course, and Ipswich were one of the teams that fell to them. Elsewhere, if I can get my words out, Doncaster and Morecambe I've picked out as fixtures from the weekend because Doncaster still looking for their first win of the season. Morecambe at home is what you would class, even though I think Morecambe will be fine this season, is one which you would class as a winnable fixture for them. So I'm just interested to see how that turns out. Yeah. I'm also interested, by the way, what we didn't mention about the Morecambe game was just see how Shane McLaughlin's progressing, because I think he's progressing quite nicely there. I think that was a good move for him, and he scored a good goal, good header to get on the end of that cross. Fair play to him. Player that I thought lost his way with us at one point, but towards the end I thought he brought himself back up and was performing well, and I think I wish him well and hope he continues to do well with Morecambe. But anyway, we've got our own game to speak about, which is Plymouth at home. And right, defences, this is what I want to get onto, Stu. So Plymouth, last season in League One, they had the second worst defence in the division. Of all the teams that did not get relegated, theirs was the worst defence. They conceded like 80 goals, which is ridiculous. It's more than two a game. This season, and they're unbeaten since the opening day, they're currently eighth in the league. They've only conceded 4 goals in 6 games. And I looked and I noted that they had invested in defenders in the summer, and 3 of those that they brought in are actually playing at the moment, including Brendan Galloway, formerly of Luton Town. Do you think Ryan Lowe has it was difficult not to spot a weakness, but do you think he's been shrewd in how not only he's recruited but also it seems how they're setting up and trying to be more defensively solid this year, and will that give us a problem if they tend to keep things tight on Saturday, as you'd expect them to do?
Yeah, so, Joe, you know, I like Plymouth. I have liked Plymouth, to be honest with you. It's a nice club down there. The ground's been done up, and I've never had a problem with them. But I was fortunate enough to be at a 4 game at QPR last season, and then also in the press room when Ryan Lowe was chatting. And he came across really well, you know, really well, complimentary. Wanted his team to play in the right way that he felt, passing football, but also knew that he had a young team and he had to develop them. And also he's got a chairman who we know is a local millionaire. I think if I'm being generous, I think he's more than a multi. I think he's a multi-millionaire. But he hasn't, you know, he's very much behind his manager, letting them develop naturally rather than investing, you know, ridiculous amounts of money. And I think what you're seeing at Plymouth is a natural progression. You can say you're right in what you're saying. You know, centre half, they play 3-5-2. So that would be interesting to see how we play that, because we've seen teams change their formation. I'll be really interested to see whether they come to our place and try and stop us playing. So there's a lot of things. I just think it'd be a really good game. One thing I did notice was in terms of yellow cards, I think we've got nearly 3 times the amount of yellow cards they've got I think 22-6 split, I think. But it's a battle of, isn't it? What wins? Is it the team that attacks and score goals, or is it the team that keeps it tight at the back? It's a good test for us because we haven't stopped scoring, as you said, Nick. You know, we only had one time we've not scored a goal, and that was up at Sunderland. And we had a chance, didn't we, it was cleared off the line. So can they stop us scoring? I think that's where the game will be won. You know, if they can keep a clean sheet, but they're going to win because they might not score themselves. But you know what I mean?
I know what
you mean. It's a really good matchup, and it's a really good test for us. But yeah, I think I like Plymouth. I like Ryan Lowe. I think he's a very charismatic person. So yeah, I'm keen to see it go.
Dan Scar and James Wilson were the other two centre halves, by the way, from Walsall and Ipswich, respectively, alongside Galloway of Luton Town. What's your prediction, though, Stu? Because I'm thinking we're going to win, but it's going to be eked out. I think we might get a 1-0.
Yeah, do you know what? I think it could go one or two ways. You know, teams, you always say that runs are there to be broken, aren't they, and sort of things like that. I still think we've got goals in us galore. And what we probably haven't touched upon, we probably have in a way, but the actual impact of this Plymouth game is that we have a game at Arsenal on Wednesday. If that's not motivation for the team to really put a performance in, not that it haven't, do we up our level? And if we up our level, I think we'll win handsomely. So I'm going to go for a 3-0 win.
Blimey. Right. Wow, that is bold. That is bold. They do have goals in them, though. Don't forget, they've got Luke Jeffcott, Rob Hardy. There are goals in there. They also potentially have an appearance from Kieran Agard. So I wonder how he'll be received at Plough Lane, if you know who I'm talking about and who he used to play for. I'm sure you can understand what I'm getting at there. The Arsenal game, Stu, we actually talked about it, to be honest with you, earlier in the show, and I think we've got the main points. But it is Wednesday night. It's going to play havoc with the podcast next week. I've got my tickets, so I'm going. I'll stand in the lower tier because I assume we'll all be standing down there, and we'll just have a good atmosphere, I think, and we'll just go and have fun and enjoy it, and what will be will be, and that's it, done. Nice little money earner, beat them probably 3 or 4-0, and Man United, you know, in the next round.
Do you know what I want to get from it is to showcase we have had a lot of plaudits, haven't we? Like Quest basically, I think, sponsor us effectively. We've had a lot of plaudits from a lot of people, different, you know, across the spectrum of how refreshing it is, and Robbo and the team and that. I just want us to go to Arsenal and show that at a Premier League level. So, you know, just to have that respect that we've gone there and we haven't sat behind the balls, I don't think we were going to do, have a go and actually come out and maybe some of the Arsenal fans or even the media come out and go, do you know what? That is a really encouraging setup, and to see what we see, because we're seeing a really encouraging thing developing, and it'll just be interesting to see what we do on a big stage.
We will dominate, but be frustrated by Aaron Ramsdale. And
will he play now, though?
Well, he's first choice in the league, so maybe not. But I think Arsenal need to win something, so I think they'll be putting out a very strong side.
Yeah, I agree.
We shall see. All right. That's it for current affairs. Looking back, 2001, 2002, the week of September 17th to September the 23rd. And Stu, you said earlier about Ipswich fans expecting to be getting out of this league because they're a big club with a big history. And this week, 20 years ago, they were playing Torpedo Moscow in the UEFA Cup, having finished fifth in the Premier League the season before. They were back in Europe for the first time for something like 30 years, if not more, 35 years, maybe something like that. They beat Torpedo Moscow 1-0. They won the second leg as well. Proper old school, just straight knockout in the UEFA Cup. Loved it much better than whatever we have today, because new is not always better. But do you remember? You won't do. Well, I'll be amazed if you do and impressed. Who scored Ipswich's winning goal in their 1-0 victory over Torpedo Moscow in 2000?
You know, I can't remember who the score was, but I remember it was like a rocket into the top corner. All I can remember.
Is that a torpedo joke?
I couldn't help it.
Sorry, with Stu is laughing. Stu is laughing at his torpedo joke, which brings the total of people laughing at that joke to one.
Well, it'll probably be two. My wife hears it, because she'll be like, what? Yes, are they still around, torpedo? Or are they sort of like...
Is this another torpedo joke?
They've been torpedoed. But it tickled me. because Moscow, I can't believe they're still around.
Moscow still exists, Stu. It's in Russia.
Well, yes, it does. No, I can't. I can't, in all seriousness. If it was a 2-yard winner.
Titus Bramble. So I'm going to imagine a header from a corner. Titus Bramble.
Like an arrow into the top corner, wouldn't it?
Make it stop, please. Right. On the pitch for us that week, we got our first win since the opening day with a 4-0 midweek hammering of Crewe Alexandra with Wayne Brown on the score sheet, if you remember him.
I do.
Centre-half. Came in for that season. David Connolly, Kevin Cooper the first, and David Nielsen, who will feature in this feature around about November, December time. But yeah, stunning victory. And then 3 days later at the Hawthorns against promotion chasing West Bromwich Albion, who would go on to get promoted that season, David Connolly sent off after half an hour for foolishly kicking the ball away. Second booking. We had 10 men, basically defended, stuck everyone behind the ball for the entire game, and then at the very end, just went up the other end. Kevin Cooper had the shot, keeper spilt it, Neil Shipley rushed in, and he put the ball in with some part of his anatomy that to this day we're not entirely sure which part. Very memorable victory up at the Hawthorns. I remember it well. Celebrations we had not seen probably since the Aston Villa John Hartson equaliser a couple of years before. We thought we were going to stay up. It was quite mad behind the goal there.
Yeah, I didn't go. I mean, I do remember.
It was the best away game ever, apart from Charlton in 2016.
Yeah, of course. What I do remember is watching Soccer Saturday. And obviously, that was early days when they did that. And, you know, they go to... And I was really... I was like, wow, do you know what I mean? I didn't like West Brom. You know, I went from a stage of liking West Brom because they'd done the boing, boing, baggies, baggies.
Yeah.
And I thought that was quite nice. Until you go there and they beat you and you're hearing them sing it against you and you think, I don't like you anymore. That's how fickle I am. So it was actually like, well, I don't think you're singing your boing, boing, baggies, baggies now, are you, West Brom fans? I took delight out of that. It's weird, isn't it? It's weird when you hate someone for, actually hate's a strong word, when you dislike them for what they sing.
Yeah. Only because you're on the, as you say, on the receiving end of it.
Yeah, it's not fun that way, is it?
It really isn't. There are many football clubs that sing ridiculous songs that have never been aimed at us, but I dislike them immensely for it. Glad All Over, for example. Yeah. Not much going on in the world of our battle against the Milton Keynes at this time, so we're just going to finish up looking. Moulin Rouge was still the box office number one at the time in movie and cinema theatres, and the number one single was beautifully sung by Mr. Stuart Deakins before we started recording. Would you like to do that now, or would you rather I just told the listeners what the song was?
No, it's obviously, yeah, you can tell them what the song is, but I never know what the real words are to it. I just... don't know the real words. I know what the our adopted words are to it.
It was DJ Otzi and Hey Baby, and we all know what we did with that song later on that season. Of course, we would later sing it to Bailey of WWE NXT fame, but you don't care about that, and neither does our listeners. They're probably thinking, right, that's about it for the end of the podcast. When Nick starts talking about wrestling, it's time to go. And it really is time to go, Stu.
Yeah, Joe, I just speak to myself. That song is so, like, that swear word that's used in that, like, don't get me wrong, I'm not a prude, I swear, but it's one word that I think is really an aggressive swear word, isn't it? It means you're really hated, like, you're proper, you know? And, I just remember thinking, oh, ouch, that's really, but you just wonder now, wouldn't it? And I'm not saying this, but if Chris Phillips forgot and just put that song on Saturday or something, could you imagine it? Thomas, close your ears, or not close your ears, because you can't close them. I'll close them for you. But the pre-match music is great. Like, Hey Jude on those speakers, because I can hear it really loudly. Other places can't, but yeah.
Yeah, we're not really hearing it where we are, but hey.
Oh, it's great music. Great music. The best tunes ever.
I will take your word for it, Stu. But anyway, that is it. That is it for this week. So thank you very much for joining me.
Thank you.
And thank you to everyone out there in listener land for listening. Updates from the games with Plymouth and Arsenal will be on Twitter at 9YRS podcast. And we must say, this is the last podcast in which my brother will be listening as a single man, because he is getting married on Thursday. So congratulations, Chris. Commiserations, Claire. We hope you're very, very happy. And, well, I'll see you on Thursday for the wedding, I guess, obviously. I'll see you on Saturday before that for the more important thing of Plymouth at home.
And but, just doing yeah. well not getting married on a Saturday, because you don't miss football for getting married.
Don't get married. Don't get married on a Saturday during the football season. Honestly.
Don't happen.
Yeah, cardinal sin. Anyway. Thank you, listeners. Alexa Bliss, bag first, milk last, 2 + 2 continues to equal 4. And we will speak to you again some point next week. We don't know when at this point, because Arsenal and Chris's wedding have buggered up our schedules. We shall let you know. See you whenever.